Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today, we have a treat. I have a treat. I'm sitting down with my wife, specifically Elizabeth, and Phil and Diane are not here today, but we wanted to follow up from a bunch of questions that you guys had sent in that are so good. And we had a particular line of questioning that was very consistent and kind of had a theme, which we're going to talk about in a second. And we're going to get to those questions. Before we do, just thank you to everybody who has rated and subscribed and left a comment on the podcast. That's so helpful, and it means the world to us that you would take the time to do that in your busy schedules. And so on whatever platform you're on, Spotify, Apple, whichever you listen, Google Play, would you just take a second and whatever platform you prefer, would you just give us a rating on that and even subscribe so you know when new content comes, and even just leave a comment to let us know how you are experiencing this. That helps us a ton. And love you all so much and appreciate you all so much for taking the time to do that. What a gift it is. And so I know this summer, Elizabeth and I have had an opportunity. Well, I've had more than you so far, but to meet some of you amazing listeners in different places and spots we've been speaking. And it's been really cool to connect with so many fun people. And it's like this instant community everywhere we go, which is really cool. But yesterday we did something fun, which for any mom that is listening right now, I was more excited. I'm not even a mom. I was so excited. Would you tell everyone what we did yesterday in prep for a fun thing we're doing?
Well, we went to the space that we are doing the motherhood retreat at, and we brought our team that's helping us with design and food and security and all of those things, and did a big walkthrough of the building and kind of felt like the next major step in finalizing plans. And it got me so excited. So excited. It's going to be just so beautiful. And we just have such a sense that the Spirit is up to something, and we just can't wait to see what it is He unfolds.
I know. It was really exciting. And if you haven't had a chance to get tickets yet, we do have some more for sale, which is great. We were able to get a space that we could fit, hopefully, everyone that wants to come, we hope. But yes, please, like, just take a second. I think the link will be in the show notes. You can just even open the app right now, click, and then
weekend in October. Bend is beautiful that time of year.
October 5th through 7th. And also just something to note, if you have a group of like 10 or more that are going, please would you email us and let us know. And we definitely give like group discounts of 10% or more for people that have groups of 10 or more. So if that's something you're interested in and you're wanting to get a group of people to come, and we would love to have you there. So those are just a couple of details, but I know we're in the middle of summer. Everyone that's listening is probably in the middle of summer. Maybe you're listening to this and it's fall because you've had no time to like even listen to podcasts through the summer, which we totally understand. But with the questions, there was just a lot of questions around the topic of chronic illness, kids with special needs, how to help your kids through trauma and different things like diagnosing your kids, or when's an appropriate time to potentially diagnose your kids with ADHD and all that stuff, or to get them tested or talk to your doctor and all those things. And so when we were reading these questions, we just really sensed that this might be, instead of an episode where we just kind of touch on these, we wanted to just take an episode and talk about these specific questions that kind of have, excuse me, one theme wrapped around it. And so we want to address those questions. So Elizabeth, are you ready to get into it?
I'm ready.
Okay. So let's ask, I'll ask the first question sent in.
Well, wait, before you get to the question, I think, you know, we touch on it a lot, but have done very few episodes with like really unpacking our story. And so I think the reason that we are drawn to these questions, and as soon as I read them, I was like, yep, 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 we've got to answer those, is because there's so much of our story and
yes,
really of the last 7 years of our life, just really being marked by just illness and suffering. And so I think anytime somebody is experiencing that or asks a question about it, you know, those who have suffered, your hearts are drawn towards those who are suffering. And so I think that so many of these questions are a part of our own story. So we don't come with all of the answers or telling you what to do, but we do have our own story to offer you and just been on this road quite a while now. And so we'll just bring some of our own experience to it, yeah, I think.
That is a great caveat would be the wrong word, but a great setup, I'd say. Great setup. And I think as we get into these questions, I know our biggest prayer when all of this happened with our daughter and then
our son, and then me.
And then all these different health dynamics. Our biggest prayer, I know I remember praying this, and I think it surprised you, Elizabeth, or I can't remember where it was, but I remember praying, God, please do not waste our pain. Yeah. And that's been our prayer, is that, Lord, if this is something that happens, would you just not waste it? Would it not just be this isolated thing that we have to suffer and then we can't ever walk through it and help anyone else? So our hope is to just be present to you and also to bring some hope. I was reading this morning in Psalm 130. I love this verse. I hadn't read it in this way, but the Spirit always speaks in a unique way and when we need it. But Psalm 130 verse 7, it says Israel, and I like that reminder that sometimes Israel is a representation of us. And so sometimes when I read the word Israel, I like to insert my name instead. Someone told me that a long time ago. It's a really helpful way to read the scripture. So insert your name, whether it's Casey or James or Catherine, right? Like Israel or Brooke or James or whoever, put your hope in the Lord. For the Lord, with the Lord is unfailing love. And then this line, just beautiful. And with him is full redemption. And with him, full redemption. And so that's kind of one of the spaces in which I know that we're sitting in today is not full redemption, but that's our prayer. Our prayer is that with him, there would be full redemption. And so I do even hope that right now, as you're listening to this, the Spirit is giving you hope to know that in him, with him, through him, even with how dark or painful or challenging today specifically is, that with him, there's full redemption of your life, of your story, of the mistakes you've made during the painful parts of your story, the stuff that's come up and out of you because of these really, really hard moments. Yeah. There's full redemption. So thank you for taking us there, sweetheart. Mm-hmm. So the first question that was sent in around this topic is, how do you cope with disappointment / guilt as a special needs mom and grow closer to God and at the same time show him, meaning the Father, the Heavenly Father, to my son? So how do we cope with disappointment and guilt as a special needs mom? Since you're a mom, why don't you go first if you're okay with that?
Oh man, how much time do we have? You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free, thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all around the world that give monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just to a few dollars a month? Thank you so much, and may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. And if you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give. I love the way this question is phrased. I love that the word disappointment is used. And you just can see the heart of the mom who is feeling a lot and also has a desire to show Jesus to her son or daughter. And, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is that we can't cope or accept the disappointment or the suffering until we've grieved the disappointment or the suffering. And, you know, I grew up like in a church culture where a lot of like the joy of the Lord is your strength and rejoice in the Lord always. And all of the like what we would say happy emotions were talked about. And the more negative emotions like anger or sadness were kind of like under the radar shamed. And so when grief really hit our life 7 years ago, and all of a sudden this daughter we thought was healthy was in fact not healthy and may not even live, and just a whole journey began, I like didn't know what to do with all of those emotions, and I wanted to just like get past them as fast as I could. And what began to unfold was actually this like horrifically hard but beautiful journey of learning to recognize grief when it was coming, because you can't predict grief. You can't be like, okay, now is a good week for me to grieve. I will grieve and then I will be done.
I mean, this just happened to me last week where I was just in such a funk and we had to sit down. I remember texting like, I just have to like verbally process
because
there's so much in my head and I can't figure it out. And I think we discovered after that process that it was grief, but grief is sneaky.
Yeah.
What even you're saying, like it can just come up out of nowhere and it's so exhausting.
Yeah. Yes. And takes a while. I think we all grieve differently and it takes a while to figure out even, you know, what it always looks like in your life. And, you know, for me, sometimes it would be exhaustion. I would like take Birdie to a therapy appointment and be so tired afterwards and be like, what the heck is wrong with me? That was like a 50-minute appointment. And then slowly over time recognize, oh, I'm like so sad. I'm so sad that this is our life, that this is all we do is go to therapy. But I think, you know, learning to recognize grief is just is the feeling that comes, the feeling of sadness, of sorrow. But what we do with that grief and what we see all over scripture, so back to what I was saying about scripture is, yes, the joy of the Lord is our strength and all of that, but there are stories after stories of lament in the scriptures. Even Jesus in the garden, he knew what was about to happen. He knew exactly what the outcome was. And he's lamenting before God, his father, saying, God, if there is any way that this cannot happen. Like he was so deep in sorrow that he was like beside himself. Like even Jesus lamented. And what lament is just that expression of that grief to God, like passionately praying our pain to him. And it really, the process of accepting the disappointment has to start with lament and grief. And again, it's not a one-time thing. It's something you have to be willing to face head on. You know, Jerry Sitzer in his book, A Grace Disguised, I think we maybe even talked about this when we interviewed him, but he gives this picture of like, so often we want to run from the darkness. We're like constantly running towards the horizon. We want the light, we want the joy. And after his experience of tragic loss, he just basically realized the darkness is always going to catch up with me. Like I'm just going to keep running and keep running and the darkness is always going to catch up. But what if I turned around and I went straight into the darkness?
Yes.
And the only way through suffering is through. And so I think just giving yourself permission to be honest, it is hard to have a child with disabilities. Yes. And it wasn't supposed to be that way. That mm-hmm. was not God's original design. He didn't plan that for your life. No. He can use it in a beautiful and powerful way, but it's a part of the fall. And we are constantly grieving the fall. And so I think it starts there, which is not a, it's not fun, but it is incredibly freeing. I think I had this fear that if I'm honest, like really honest about how I feel about I have a daughter with disabilities, then I'll get stuck there. I will just be this negative person who is like, woe is me, who doesn't accept my daughter. That was my genuine fear. And I've found the exact opposite to be true. When we're willing to be brutally honest with God, brutally honest in our community, it's so freeing. And it actually moves us through grief a lot faster than if we try to run from it.
Yeah, but you know, I think the thing, well said, by the way, the thing that's really challenging, and I'll just say vulnerably from my perspective, is I for so long haven't been able to identify the emotions that are around grief.
Yeah.
And I think you might be really, like whoever's listening might be really in tune to that. But I think there's also people listening who are like, I just feel a lot and I'm really edgy and grumpy and everyone around me is just relaying, you're really hard to be around, you're really grumpy, you're really frustrating. So I think even identifying your emotions, and emotions, oh my goodness, are all over the scriptures. I love how clear God is about that, about our own emotions and being aware that we have a responsibility to actually identify and understand what's going on in us. The scriptures say, examine yourselves, literally mm-hmm. that idea that it's our job to know what's going on inside of us. And if we don't, you know, I know for me, that's a therapist, that's Elizabeth, sometimes that's Phil and Diane, sometimes that's a group of people, but they help me understand what's going on inside of me. But two just interesting pieces of scripture as you think about this idea, you know, Elizabeth, that you said, thinking about the fact and the reality that this wasn't God's heart desire for, you know, it's not his desire for this to happen, but this is the world that we live in. And, you know, there's this verse in Proverbs 13. What does it say? It's unrelenting disappointment leaves you heart sick. Mm. And unrelenting, you know, I think of a mom with special needs or a mom with a special needs child or a father with a special needs child. That is unrelenting disappointment. Mm-hmm. That leaves you heart sick. That leaves you discouraged, deeply, deeply discouraged. Every time you interact, you're both blessed and discouraged. And I think sometimes we have to acknowledge that that's our reality. Now, I think there's beauty there, but we have to acknowledge that there's moments when our heart gets sick. And then there's this other verse in 1 Samuel 15. I won't go into the story of why Samuel was really angry, but Samuel was really angry at Saul, if you remember Samuel. But 1 Samuel 15, verse 11 and 12, it just says this: Samuel was angry when he heard this. He's talking about some bad news he heard about Saul. And this is what he said. This is what the scriptures say. He prayed his anger and disappointment all through the night.
That's that lament.
Yeah. He prayed his anger and his disappointment. He talked to God about it. He was aware, like, God, I am really discouraged by this. And I know we've had many talks together, but also with God about this. Like, this is not what we hoped for. This is not what we desired. And the lament piece is beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I just want to frame that reality that unrelenting disappointment leaves us just sick sometimes, heart sick. Mm-hmm. And I like that language. So,
yeah. And I think that grief and lament is especially present in like the beginning. And I don't just mean like the first month of a diagnosis or a child being born, or, you know, whenever you find out that your child is going to function differently. I think it's especially present in the first several years. And then over time, I think it begins to shift. The grief is not gone. I will never stop grieving what happened to my daughter.
Yeah.
And not just, it's not even so much about what happened anymore. It's now watching the suffering that she lives with every day. I will always grieve for her. She shouldn't have to carry that load. But at the same time, because of all the grief work, because of the years of feeling like I was drowning in it, there's also this deep acceptance that we have the possibility of stepping into. Mm-hmm. Now, this isn't an automatic, Well, I grieved. And so then the next step is I just accept it, no problem. It is an active acceptance.
Yes.
And choosing every day joy and acceptance. But it does become more natural when you start to make those choices. Like I remember when our daughter was first diagnosed and I wanted so badly to delight in her differences. And I would see other moms who were further down the road with me who just delighted in their kids. And I wanted so badly to get there, but every time she did something that was different or quirky, or every time she couldn't do something, I just felt so sad. And I honestly wasn't sure I'd ever like get there. And now I feel like I delight in her in such a special way. Her quirks are just
the best.
So endearing. They're the best. And I would say there's more joy and acceptance than there is grief, but both are still present.
And oh, absolutely. And if anyone's wondering like, what is going on with Birdie? What's her story? We'll put the link in the show notes of, we did an episode just kind of unpacking that.
Yeah, but that was a couple years ago. I think I just cried the whole time. I think we need to redo it.
You didn't. No, you didn't. It's far clearer than you remember. But that said, that will give you at least a frame of reference. So yeah. If anyone's curious, like, I want to know more, that you can check that out. But because I know there's moments when you're listening to a podcast, you're like, what are they talking about? It's so frustrating. So I
Cliff Note version, she had a really rare form of epilepsy that caused a bunch of brain damage and will affect her the rest of her life.
Yes.
Yeah.
And kids in general, you know, I think it's really important to keep track of their sweet moments. And the reason I say that is because as parents, especially with special needs kids, it's very easy and very clear to see the disappointing things.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's very hard to remember the good things because we're so overwhelmed with disappointment. And so one thing I started doing was keeping a note. I told Elizabeth about this, but just in general, we end up communicating a lot, whether it's over podcasts or speaking, and that can be very problematic because you can say silly things. But you know, as keeping track of stories is important. So I started this thing called a story bank where anytime there was just something that moved me, I'd write it down. And it has been such a helpful practice as a dad because there's so many things I've realized with our kids that they say, especially when they're young, that just move me in a deep way, that are so beautiful. And it helps me anytime I go back and look at this little note app that has stories in it. Like, and it's just a quick little story, but it helps so much to remember that there's so much good going on at the very same time. As a little example, just the other day I was putting Sloan to bed and it was so sweet. And she just looks at me and she says, Sloan's our 5-year-old. And she just says, Dad, I have something to tell you. And I was like, oh, I'm, you know, just curious as a dad, where is this going to go? And she just looks at me and she goes, now here's a dad with pizzazz. And I was like, what are you talking about? So I'm laughing and I'm quickly like grabbing my phone so I don't forget it. And I'm writing it down. She's like, what are you doing? I was like, I got to write this down. This is really sweet. I got to remember this moment. And so I put now there's a dad with pizzazz. And she goes, no, that's not what I said. Now here's a dad with pizzazz.
She's get just it right, smiling. Dad.
Anyway, I think that whether you do it in a note app form or trying to write it down, I think keeping track of the good moments is just as important to remember the hard moments. You're not going to forget the hard moments. They're sometimes a little bit easier to access, but sometimes the good moments can be hard. And so keeping track of them is really helpful.
Yeah. And I think, you know, disability parenting is lonely and you need to do as much as you can to have at least one other parent, one other mom, one other friend with you who knows a little bit what it's like. Now, obviously, every story is unique. Nobody's going to be experiencing your exact same story, but you need to have at least one person in your life who also understands the load that you're carrying. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have this for years, and I do have more of this now, and I wish I'd sought it out more or began to just, maybe you don't have the energy to seek it out. That's very understandable, but just start asking God, would you bring me one friend who understands what my load is like and who can see me in this? And I have amazing friends, and I have so many friends who've been with the journey, like in the journey with us. But unless you've actually experienced the load day to day, it's just a deeper level of understanding, and having somebody who can just emotionally carry that load with you is so incredibly helpful. But to the end of the question, that how do I grow closer to God and then show him to my son? I love that. We can't take our kids anywhere that we haven't gone ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the best ways we show God to our kids is by our own lived experience with him. Mm-hmm. And nothing will shape you more than suffering. Suffering will shape you in some way, shape, or form. And so if you can just know, even if you can't see it now, that if you can wake up every day and be honest about how you feel with God, surrender your heart to him. Like, grief is a great act of surrender and release of control. And as you begin to do that and begin to accept the reality that is your life and grieve what the life you thought you were going to have, like, that alone brings you so much closer to the Father, and you experience God there. And it's out of that that you show Jesus to your son. And I wish that I could give you some like formula. This is exactly how you do it. I actually feel like right now, even with Birdie, her understanding of God is so different, and her connection to God is going to look very different. And so we're having to unfold, like, how do we help her connect with God? And we're having to learn her in a new way, you know? But just, we can move on to the next question. But I just want to read one scripture that you've all heard a million times, but really stuck out to me in a different way a couple of years ago. You know, what is the one scripture you hear quoted anytime you're going through something hard? "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds," James chapter 1. But this part had just jumped off the page to me, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Now, the joy that comes when we face trials of various kinds, like that verse talked about, is not this manufactured, "I should be so joyful because life is so hard." No, the joy is what the suffering produces in us. That's where the joy comes from. I can honestly say that we are a much more joyful, like, deep down, gratitude-filled, joyful family because of the suffering that we've gone through. And so that's what it produces in you. So I think that if you can just cling on to that hope, that it's, you don't have to like be super happy and joyful about what is happening, but what God can do in and through you because of the suffering is where the joy comes from.
We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes, and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you. I don't know if this will fit in the next question, but basically a different way to say what you said, not different way, but something that is help, maybe a phrase that would help you maybe understand why the, you know, trying to help your child walk in this when this probably brings up a bunch in you. I was reading the other day and I came across this quote. Do you know what our children's greatest role and capability is? It's showing you everything that is unresolved within you. They bring up all your wounds to the surface. And then, you know, this guy goes on to basically say, but the problem is we often blame our kids for making us angry. But the fact is, they're bringing things up in you. That's why it's so hard to be calm and curious about what they're freaking out about, because their freaking out brings up 1,000 things in you. And so your kids have a superpower, especially those with special needs. I think they can bring what's unresolved within you. So bringing that to the Father and continuing that process. So that's, we did the classic thing we always do. We spent so much time on the first one, but let's move on to the second one, the second question, because again, they're all related, but I think this, we want to go into a couple specifics. So the next question had to do with chronic illness. And this is, a husband was asking this question: how can husbands better support their wives who struggle with chronic illness? I don't know. So let's go on to the next question.
Just how kidding. Can they, babe?
Oh my gosh. Again, I think you said, how much time do we have?
You know, I'm so curious if a wife is asking this question or if a husband is asking this question.
Yeah, I don't.
Is a wife hoping her husband will listen, or?
Or just listen to this part. We're just going to send him this. No, it's a guy. It's a man. And good job for asking question. Good job for asking. That shows a lot right there that you would take the time to even ask that question. For context, Elizabeth has chronic illness of all sorts, which has been a big struggle. Do you want to go into just give a little highlight of kind of what we walk through on the daily? And then I can speak to some of the stuff that I know I've had to learn very much the hard way.
So I've had, like, I would say mild chronic illness our whole marriage.
Yes.
With little bits of information and diagnoses over the years, but it's really been in the last 3 years that there's just been a lot more clarity. And
a lot more that's intensified.
Yeah. So with, you know, trauma and stress does amazing things to your body. And so with kind of the two traumatic illnesses with our kids, it kind of just like amplified all of the sickness I had going on that I didn't fully have answers for, to the point that I was like, had to go really seek out answers because I was just getting sicker and sicker and sicker. So within the last 3 years, I was diagnosed first with endometriosis, which was like, okay, I can live with that. Like, we can deal with that. Then Lyme disease, and tried to treat the Lyme disease, got way sicker.
Yes.
And then most recently, within the last 6 months, an autoimmune disease called ankylosing spondylitis. Why they name these things the most ridiculous names, I have no idea. But it causes basically really severe arthritis in your spine and then other areas of your body. And so I've lived with pretty intense chronic pain for the last couple of years. So I'm just this trifecta of health, non-health, whatever you want to call it.
You know, it's a lot. And I think, this is a hard one for me to even talk about because I feel like
We're so in it.
And there's not, I just need to be so clear that there's days that I do great with this, which is few, and there's more days that I do not great with this. So I think
that's the opposite. I think most days you do great with it.
It's an ongoing thing. So I think to paint the reality that what I'm going to share with you is partly lived and partly still vision. It's still vision of who I'm wanting to become. But on really hard days, it's very hard to live in it because life is real. Needs are real. Things are happening. Schedules, kids, activities, you know, for us, travel schedules and all, like, it all compiles and compounds a lot of times to catch me off guard and by surprise. And then I'm not ready to handle it all graciously. But things that I've been learning over the years, and somebody, my sweet therapist, I love him very much, told me a long time ago, and I've clung to this, which is very important, is that chronic illness is a family affair. So you're asking this question as a husband, right? This is very much not just your struggle, her struggle. It is your family's struggle. And it's not that your wife's doing anything wrong or that needs to be like, oh gosh, you're a burden to the family. No, it's highlighting what reality is. When you have chronic illness in anyone in your family, that is a whole family situation. And so some things I've learned, if I try to come in and help support Elizabeth and take care of all the kids, and she's having a bad pain night as an example, and I try to put the kids to bed and do the dishes and make sure everything's fine and try to relieve her, but that happens 3 to 4 times a week, or if that happens
every night
and then that happens for a month, what happens in me is I quickly grow in resentment when I have to do it alone, because it's one thing to show up for one or two or three of those moments. It's a whole other thing to basically live in that. And that becomes really, really hard. And then my heart will lean towards resentment, anger, frustration, and not at Elizabeth, although it gets directed at her. It's actually just at the situation. I'm resenting the fact that this is our life. And so that is something that I would say first you have to just be aware of. That's a family affair. And if you do everything alone all by yourself, it's very easy to live in resentment about the whole situation. The first couple times I can do it pretty well. And then by the 10th time, I'm like, I just can't believe it. I'm like, this is too much. I cannot believe this is happening again. And that's honestly what happens. And so, you know, in those moments, if you're a husband and you're feeling like, how can I support my wife? Oftentimes, you know, these things can make you feel trapped because you have to live a very particular way. You don't have a lot of different options. And so, I have to remember a couple things that are important, and I have to relay this to her often, that I'm not mad at her, but she does have a secret illness, meaning it's more of an invisible illness, which makes it harder to even validate sometimes. Not that I don't think she's sick, but that when anybody has a broken leg, everyone goes, oh, well, you have a broken leg. You're obviously not going to be going swimming today. And nobody's really mad about that. And everybody knows subconsciously that that has an end date. As soon as that cast comes off, you're back to normal. It's okay. This is just a season. When chronic illness is a part of your life, there's no end date that you know of. Now, maybe there's radical healing. Maybe there's breakthrough in medication and different technologies, but we just don't know. And so the unknown tends to be very hard for me too. And again, I'm sharing stuff that I think is really important to know as a foundation before you go and help your wife. What were you going to say something?
Oh, I'm just thinking of the thing that Jim shared with us about acute pain versus chronic pain and a broken limb versus an amputation. We might have shared it on the podcast.
We totally have, but why don't you just share it really quick? Because I think that's a great
But to your point, framework. Like a broken limb, a broken leg, it's like acute pain. It hurts really bad when you break a leg, and it's sore even after you get the cast on. But you experience the really acute pain, and then your body heals. And then in most cases, you go back to life as normal. Sometimes there's a little bit of physical therapy. Sometimes there might be like lingering weakness in that limb. But for the most part, you can do everything you did before and you go back to normal life. Mm-hmm. But when there's an extreme loss or a chronic illness, it's more, we have to think of it more like an amputation. It's more like the loss of a limb. Mm-hmm. When you lose a limb, you have to learn a new way of being and a new way of living and a new way of moving to learn to compensate for the limb that is now gone.
Yes.
And this is where I think chronic illness can be so, at least mine in the nature of it, can be so just tricky to navigate, because I know for us, it's been years of like, okay, I have this diagnosis now. I'll do these things and maybe I'll get better. Oh, that wasn't it. I have this diagnosis now. I'll do these things and they'll make me better. And oh no, that made me worse. And so it can feel this like, well, how do we settle into some, how do we function without the limb when we're not sure the limb is gone? We don't really know. Like, it can be just almost deceptive in a way of like, well, I might have a good day or a good week followed by a really horrible 3 months. And so how do you get into some sort of rhythm of life? And I think that's in full transparency where we are still trying to figure out like, what is our plan on the really bad days? What do we do? Who do we call to help? When do we even recognize that we need help?
So let me get to that. That's kind of like, you know, how to help your wife. And I love, thank you for that framework, honey. That was really, again, helpful. And I think that's exactly what we're talking about. So you have to approach it very differently. And with chronic pain, with Elizabeth, for example, we have to, and we haven't actually done this well yet. You have to have an advanced plan for bad pain days. So we kind of have like our normal day, like, okay, if you need help, I'm going to jump in. I'm going to come home and this is going to be kind of like what I'm going to need to do so you can be relieved, right? But then there's those like really bad pain days. And there's like the times when it's like overwhelming for me, or I'm having a bad day, and then I have to jump in and play all these different roles. And what my therapist has been so helpful with helping me see is that we need a practical care team. So that looks like family members, community people that are set up, that know on these really hard days, we're going to potentially call you at any moment. And if we do, here's what we're asking you to think through, or maybe even commit to, so that we can receive some relief or help, or just knowing like, hey, we have support. And so having like an advanced plan, or having a plan for those, is really helpful. I would just say that that's something that we are still working on, because it's just tricky. It's tricky to know how to do that. But
tricky to know what we need. And that plan's always going to be changing, because depending on the stage of your kids or what you do for work or...
Exactly.
You know.
And each week is different. But I know that, you know, if I'm the only person or the only responder to Elizabeth's chronic pain, and this is to the husband who's asking, if I'm the only person that can help her practically or meet the needs of the family, then my nervous system is going to fight me. Because I cannot take on all of her pain, all of her needs, all of the things that are going on in her in that moment.
All of my responsibilities.
And then all the things going on with the kids. And so And right now I'd say, you know, we're growing and we're trying to figure out that plan. But, you know, I think another thing that was very helpful for me is, you know, 50% of the time, you know, pain days for Elizabeth, as an example, 50% of the time, half the time, there's just going to be no real reason why it's really hard that day. And I think for a long time, we would try to go like, okay, well, if you don't do that workout, or if you don't do this thing, or you don't eat that way or whatever, then you'll be okay. And what we're doing there, what I'm doing there as a husband, is I'm trying to seek control so that she doesn't have these hard pain days. But the reality is there's just half the time, things are just really bad and we just don't know. And so I would say, if you can have a couple things that I'll just say, we'll move on to the next question, is if you could have a team of people yourself. So to this husband, I just want to speak to you. Great job for asking this question.
Yeah.
It's hard to ask this question. It's hard to admit that we are not really well equipped for this naturally. And it takes a lot of work to figure out. But if you could get a friend that you can be completely brutally honest with, I think that's important. You don't need to be, you know, rude or shaming your spouse or your kids, but you need to have somebody that you can raw and honest with, like, this is making me feel X. And because of that, it makes me want to do this. And I'm going crazy. Like, you need to have an outlet of somebody who you can trust.
Who's not your wife,
who loves you and who can listen to you. And then listen for the things that are like, hey, you know, when you were saying this, I was, you know, this kind of came up and I'm wondering if you need to be either aware of that or
careful. It needs to be the right person, not somebody who's going to just like feed it, but just somebody who can see you. And
husbands, not another woman.
Yeah.
Please. Like, that's so important. It needs to be another brother. It needs to be another man. You're already having these moments of, you know, potential tension points with your spouse. It needs to be, you know, if that woman's a sister or something like that, your actual physical sister, you know, or something, or a mom.
Yeah.
But even so, I would be careful with your mom, because there can be resentment built into the family. So I think a friend is ideal, and then finding a community. And then the other thing I would say is having a group of people to walk you through this. I know I have two different therapists that I end up talking about. They are very clued into what's going on. And at any point outside of our regular meeting that I need to call them, they're available, which is incredible. So there's just days when it's really hard and I'm like, I can't see straight. And so I'll send a text, and often within, you know, 24, 48 hours, we can talk and discuss. And so having that team, and then pray for healing. I think the thing that you have to remember is that your prayers are building up, and God wants to answer prayer, and God really does want to heal your spouse in a deep way. Frank Laubach, who's one of my favorite writers on prayer, says, every prayer we utter from the heart begins to change history at once. And then another thing he said, which is around this idea, so I would encourage you to pray, is people seldom pray as if they realize that prayer changes the world.
Yeah.
If we could start praying in a way that we would realize that our prayer changes our reality and potentially your spouse's, it's a huge gift. So let's move on to the other ones. Did you want anything else to have anything else to say before we moved on?
Just that I think that it's important to, I think all husband and wives have to communicate a lot. But when when you have added complexities of chronic illness or children with disabilities, or you have to press into communication even more. And I think it's so easy, especially if you've been married a while, to just assume what your spouse needs. But ask her, how can I support you in what you're experiencing? Because what she says might surprise you. It might be very practical, but it also might be emotional. It might be, I just need to know that you see me, and I need to know that you're not mad at me. Or, you know, I just need you to let me be sad sometimes about it. You know, I think the valiant effort that husbands put into to want to fix and to rescue, and and to protect, and that's a beautiful thing. But it doesn't work all that well in a situation like chronic illness, where sometimes we just need to be seen, especially if it's more like the invisible illness like I experience, or that, you know, is not visible to the naked eye unless you know me really well. The people who know me really well can walk in the door, look at me and say, it's a pain day, isn't it? Like, yes, it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think just ask her, communicate with her, let her know your heart. I want to support you. This is really hard. I don't always know how. So can you point me in the right direction?
Yeah. I love that. And I really think that's a, thank you for sharing that, because that's a very wise way, instead of trying to figure it out yourself. Just ask.
Yeah.
It's important. If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need, as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers. Okay, so next question, just two more really quick. Thoughts on what age is appropriate to assess your kids for ADHD? We have some experience with this, and this will be brief, but we'll just give you our quick thoughts. And everyone kind of differs on this, and I don't think this is a right or wrong, but what we'll do is just give you our perspective or opinion. But I think also this isn't law. I think this is more discernment and wisdom.
Yeah. So I think in talking to parents about diagnoses, because we get asked about this a lot because of just all the different diagnoses we have amongst our kids. I think there's a common fear that I hear that I feel like is important to maybe address out the gate, is that I don't want to put my kid through a process of evaluation or diagnosis. I don't want them to feel different. I don't want them to feel less than. I don't want them to feel, you fill in the blank. And I think that is that's a good-hearted parent. That's a natural, like, we want to protect our kids from pain. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to make a diagnosis an identity. Like, all of that is really good. And I say, yes, important.
Yes.
But I think maybe an important factor to keep in mind is that we live in a world, and this is slowly maybe changing a little bit because we have more awareness now, but we live in a world that is geared towards neurotypical people. And so the way the school system is set up, the way our jobs are set up, the way life is set up,
it works for the top
80%. It works best for neurotypical people.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether you go the diagnosis route or not, over time, your child is going to feel different. I mean, perfect example. Our son was in public school and he had dyslexia and we didn't know. Mm. I had no idea.
He felt very different.
And what happened to him over time, he was getting great grades. He was reading. His teachers were saying, he's doing amazing. But he was saying, I'm stupid. And he was telling us how horrifically stressful school was and how he felt on the inside and how everybody knew the answer before he did. And he was feeling all sorts of things that started to become identity things for him. I'm stupid. I'm not smart. Everybody is better than me, you know? And come to find out, he had dyslexia. He's working 10 times harder than all the other kids, and his brain just works differently. And so whether as much as we can try to shield them from that, like, they are going to eventually begin to feel different too. And oftentimes the way the enemy skews that is telling them that they're not as good as everybody else, or they're not as smart as everybody else. You know, I know a family member who's an adult who recently was diagnosed with ADHD, and he said, I just always thought I was stupid. And he's not, he's brilliant. He just needed some help focusing his mind. And he's brilliant and successful, but he doesn't feel successful. He has like a deep-rooted identity that he's not successful. So I think that's just important to know. And so I think we come from the end of when you know what's going on, you can get your kids the adequate help that they need.
Yes.
So I think if I can't give you an exact age, but I can say that how old was Birdie when she was diagnosed? She wasn't being evaluated just for that.
Oh, you're talking about ADHD.
For ADHD. I think she was five when she was, she sees a neuropsychologist regularly for all of her developmental stuff. So we weren't pursuing that diagnosis, but he started saying at like four or five, I'm pretty sure she has ADHD. I'm not going to diagnose her yet. And then at her, she had another evaluation when she was six, and he diagnosed her. And we already knew. We already knew. Like, we were already seeing it. We were already sure the diagnosis was coming. And so she was six. And then our son was just recently diagnosed with mild inattentive ADHD. And we pursued that diagnosis because we felt like I was seeing it play out in school. And we felt like it would be helpful for him to understand so that we can start to get him tools he needs to be able to focus his mind when it's difficult. So, but he was older. He was 13. So I think that it's almost more of an intuition thing as a parent. If you're, or maybe this would be helpful. If you're seeing it affect their everyday life, things they do in their everyday life are hard, because oftentimes what happens with our kids with ADHD is we unintentionally communicate irritation with them because they forget a lot. And it's hard to see what is forgetfulness, what is irresponsibility, mm-hmm. what is willful disobedience. Like, it can be hard to parse out, like, okay, but I literally just told you to do this chore. I like mm-hmm. looked you in the eye. You repeated it back to me. Did you really forget? And so I think we can unintentionally just exude irritation towards them if we don't understand what's going on. And so I think if you find yourself irritated with them all the time, you're seeing these things impact their daily life, then I think it's time to start talking about mm-hmm. getting some help. And I think there's, last thing I'll say on it, I think there's a lot of like stereotypes around what that process, or maybe stereotypes is the wrong word, misunderstanding about what that process is like, that mm-hmm. doctors are just wanting to slap on diagnoses.
We have to be careful though. Because we don't have access to everyone's doctor. I mean, if you feel that way, you should definitely talk. But yes, I know what you're saying, but I think it is important because
that's true.
We've had
really good doctors.
Yeah, but we've also prayed for really good doctors because we've had so many things. So I think there's also that too. Remember to pray for that. But
our current neuropsychologist who saw both our kids is actually extremely slow to diagnose. And so I trust him because I know he's not just going to slap a diagnosis on. So I don't know. I feel like this is a tricky question to answer, but I'm a big advocate for understand what's happening, because then you can that's how we can unfold and help our kids in the best way possible.
Well said. I'm glad you answered that question. And I think, again, this is just our opinion. This is how we're doing it.
This is just pure opinion. And
this is our way. But you have to just, that God's given you your children to discern that and to ask him, and you're responsible for their development. And you're also responsible, you know, in the sense of if you're needing a nudge because you're feeling overwhelmed by it personally and you're not wanting to do it because it's bringing up stuff in you, I would say identify that and don't let that be the reason you're not getting your kids help in different ways. Mm-hmm. So last question, and we'll be done. And it's a big one, but I know we'll just mention a couple of things, is how do you help your kids walk through difficult family dynamics / trauma? That is a very full question. Mm-hmm.
We have some episodes planned with some therapists to do more deeper dives into this, because this is very real and needs to be handled with such care. And
I would say our biggest answer is we're going to address this in a deeper way.
Yeah.
If I can just, I'll just say my parting thoughts with this one, as we go today, but I think you have to first identify that there is trauma, identify what it is, identify what the responses from trauma are. It's really hard to do all of or any healing when you don't know what you're healing from or dealing with. You have to see it clearly. And so again, kind of our staple answer for today, but has been very helpful. Again, it's a team of people. It's your spouse, it's close friends that know you, it's therapists, it's potential pastors or people that you trust that are in your life to help you pull this out. I know that that's been our situation. And I think that you cannot always do that alone, especially if the family dynamic is within your, you know, nucleus family, your family of husband, wife, and kids. Well, then that can sometimes be even harder to see. So I would just say that having people help you see, and then as people help you see, begin to take the steps of healing. And I think it's so hard to give a blanket answer to that, a specific answer to that, because each kid is so different. Each family is so different. Each trauma is so different. And how that trauma impacts each person is so different.
So different.
And as a person myself who's gone through lots of trauma therapy, how one situation impacts one kid, even versus their sibling, could be very different. Same scenario, how it impacts them and how it plays out over their life could be very different. And so I think that's important to highlight, that you have to know what's going on, have specific help for your specific situation.
Yeah. And I think one thing that I know was really a relief to me as we were experiencing a lot of trauma in our own family, and that's, you know, that will maybe be a story we unpack another time, but through Duke's sickness, we had 2 years of pretty intense trauma in our house. And we knew it was happening. We knew everybody was experiencing it. We were trying to like minimize it as best we could. We had a team full of therapists triaging our family through the whole thing. And yet it was inescapable. And I remember learning in that time, and it was so freeing to me, that, you know, we think of, oh my gosh, my kid, you know, lost a loved one, or they were in a horrific car accident, or, you know, we think of these, and those are, you know, big T traumas, but think about all the little T traumas that they experience. And we think for sure that is going to be lifelong trauma stored in their body. And what are we going to do about it? But, you know, the difference between something actually becoming trauma, a memory that is stored in our body that then we have physical and emotional and mental reactions to down the road, the difference between it being stored in our body as trauma versus like a really hard experience is not actually the event. It's the support we received while we were going through the event during and after. And so the most powerful thing you can do for your kids when they're experiencing trauma or have experienced trauma is to just be with them. And to just, sometimes it's sitting them with them without words. Sometimes it's just saying, I see that that was really hard. Can you tell me more about that? And it's looking for the opportunities where you see they're letting you, they're like beginning to crack open the door, and you just sit with them and say, do you want to talk about it? I'm right here. And just like showing up for them when you can. You're not going to do it perfectly, especially if you're experiencing the trauma as well. You're not going to do it perfectly. But going back when you don't do it perfectly and saying, man, I was really triggered by you being triggered. I wasn't present to you. I want to know how you're feeling. Like, that is the difference between something being something that really negatively impacts somebody their whole life and actually being something they can work through and have the support they need. And it can be a bad memory versus a horribly traumatic thing stored in their body forever.
There's, with everything you're saying, even there's all these studies out now about even how, what face of compassion that you make, even your facial expressions of kindness and empathy when somebody, friend, family, even child is telling you an experience of trauma, even by having a gracious, merciful response in your words, but in your face, can even bring tons of healing. And then the other thing is, I think you had just said, but can't emphasize it enough, just being there with them. There's a situation that happened with one of our kids, and they just, there's often times that they just need to talk to me about it. It wasn't even between me and this kid, but it was, they just need to talk about it. They need to talk about it, I mean, almost every other day. And my response is just the same. Yep, you can tell me everything about this. Let's talk. Let's go through it. Let's go through the deep, like whatever you need to talk about. you know, let's talk about it. And most of the time it's very inconvenient when they want to talk about it. And it's like usually at every real conversation, I don't know if everyone else experiences this, is at night, like, you know, all the kids, all their emotions start to settle, all their thoughts start to settle, mm-hmm. and they're how they feel comes to the surface. So I think what you said, Elizabeth, is just key in the meantime, before we, you know, go into more details, and there's so many resources out there, but I think that's a really great thing. It's just listening with compassion and letting them know, whether that's your spouse or your children, I'm here in this with you. I don't know where this is going to go or all the things that you're going to feel or how hard mm-hmm. this is going to be for you, but no matter what we go through, we're going through it together. Like, I'll be with you in this, going to therapy together. That might be something, even with your kids, going with them for a while. And then even having
that was
them,
incredibly helpful for us.
Huge. Yeah. That was huge. And that's, again, you know, obviously our story has been greatly impacted and blessed and increased by people who are following Jesus. That's a very important caveat. Mm-hmm. Following Jesus, love the scriptures, and are trained in the arena of mental health and psychology and different kinds of therapies. And so we've been really blessed by that. And our life and our family has changed because of that. And so even as we close today, I just want to say to all the people listening, I'm so sorry for the challenges that you're facing.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry that this is the load that you have to carry. And at the very same time, you've been entrusted with a level of suffering that, as you are with Jesus, if you are able to sit with him through it, there are gifts, there are levels of closeness, there is beauty. And this is such a overdone phrase, but there are really beauty in ashes. There are beautiful moments. And so as you're walking through these moments, I just want to encourage you. You have a couple here that's sitting on a couch in their home that totally sees you, even though this is all audio, totally sees you and sees what you're going through and wants you to know that we have experienced deep, deep sorrow, and we are also still standing, and we also still have great joys in our life. But it's not without its challenges, but we are still put together, and that's sincerely by the grace of God and his goodness and his there-ness with us.
Yeah. I feel like I just want to pray over everybody as we close. God, for the mom or dad that's listening right now, would you just enable them to just exhale all of the responsibility and the load and the sorrow and the processing and the caregiving and all of that that rests on their shoulders? Would you just lighten their load today? I just think of, there's a scripture in Psalms that says that you removed their shoulder from the burden. And I just get this picture of, like, you just sliding your shoulder in and placing the burden on yours. The burden is not gone, but the weight has shifted. And I just ask that you would do that even today by people just listening and hopefully hearing things from your spirit. And would you just be the God that you are Elroy, the God who sees, you're Emmanuel, the God who is with us. And so would you just see those listening? Would you be with those listening? And would you just lighten their load just a little bit today? Amen.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.